I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. Join us as we explore health, community, and culture from a holistic perspective. Health topics addressed on our show are for information and entertainment and should not be taken as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. I'm Kevin. This is Bridge to Everywhere, and thanks for joining us tonight. And Samantha and I have a wonderful guest tonight. Her name is Dr. Megan Danz, and she's a naturopathic doctor at Soren Crane Natural Health Center. Today, we're going to talk about the foundations of community health, and we want to talk about how naturopathic medicine plays an essential role in creating healthy families, empowered community, and a real holistic, balanced approach to living.
So before we start, I want to give a little introduction to Dr. Megan Danz. She's a family practice doctor treating acute and chronic disease. While obtaining her doctorate at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine, Megan was mentored by some of the most respected doctors in the field. In addition to training as a family practice doctor, she's also received extensive training in holistic pelvic care, shiatsu massage, cranial sacral therapy, botanical medicine, nutrition, homeopathy, biotherapeutic drainage, and gemotherapy. Megan is also a certified provider of low-energy neurofeedback systems. Neurofeedback is brainwave biofeedback used for patients with neurological, cognitive, and mood disorders, and for optimizing brain flexibility and self-regulation. Dr. Danz is a member of the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians and the Alaska Association of Naturopathic Physicians. So welcome, Megan. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
You're going to tell us a joke to start out with, right?
Thanks for such a warm welcome.
So we want to start about maybe have you tell us a little bit about what got you interested in naturopathic medicine. So maybe give us a little bit of your background and history. You know, start from when you're like 6 months old and we'll work our way up to now.
Well, the short of it is I ended up spending my college years doing pre-med with a little bit of fun entomology and ornithology, studying insects and birds at the same time. And once I left school, I came up to Alaska for good to work in Denali National Park, where I had worked for five summers previous to that as a naturopathic, or as a naturalist guide. Uh-huh. And as a guide, I learned a lot about the botanical medicine, basically, of Alaska and the all the flora and fauna of the region, and really fell in love with it. And I got an opportunity in 2000 to work with people in the Upper Otna region on some grant work doing health education and working with kids and adults and elders alike to kind of help them bridge the gap between elders and youth and understanding how important sustaining their food and their knowledge about their food was. And so I ended up spending 3 years working with people in the Upper Otna region and really enjoyed the work in helping them basically realize their own goals and working with the kids in nutrition. And then went on to work with the Aleutian Privilege Islands Association in doing lots of work with toxicology and nutrition, and again, really just helping again kind of bridge the gap of knowledge between what toxicology means and what nutrition means, and helping people feel more comfortable eating seal and halibut and their traditional foods, even though they were known to have toxic substances in them.
So. Were the communities experiencing illness as a result of increasing toxicity in these subsistence foods?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, that's a very big subject, and there's certainly a lot of research out there about that, and people are very concerned about it. And there's some very important reasons to be concerned. Certainly, there's a lot more disease, and people wonder why that is. You know, why are certain communities experiencing a lot more cancer or other sorts of diseases around the Arctic? And so it's not a really simple answer, and you could spend hours talking about it. So, but absolutely, people are very concerned, and certainly there's lots of information about pregnant women and women that are nursing passing toxins on to their babies and fetuses. And so there's a lot of concern. And what we found in the Aleutian-Pavlov region is that halibut and seal meat, the two substances that we tested, were safe enough for people to eat. And then we helped them understand kind of how to eat it to reduce their possible contamination, and especially for women who were nursing.
How do you eat halibut and seal to reduce the amount of contamination?
Well, what we found with halibut is that we were testing halibut in the Pavlov region, and in the Pavlovs, typically families who are fishing there are taking home the halibut that are about 30 pounds or so, and that was a really good amount weight for them to eat. One way you can also reduce the levels of PCBs and other kind of fat-soluble contaminants is to take the fat off, to skim the fat off. So that's one way women can kind of mitigate the concerns about toxic load of mercury. So, but then also for seal, it's really just eating a certain amount of seal and not eating more than would give them too much of a load at a certain amount of time. So there's really complicated conversation around that, and yeah. I hate to get too into it, but the real main basic message was keep nursing, keep eating your traditional foods, and make sure that you continue to teach and learn from your elders and to your children about traditional foods, because they are sustaining you culturally and nutritionally, and it's really important to continue doing that.
Right, and as a naturopath now, I mean, the role that food plays in health and wellness is extraordinary, and, you know, it's really a pressure on the health system throughout the United States, and maybe we can get into that a little bit later, too.
So from there, where did you go next?
So from there, I worked also with Seldovia Native Village, doing some more sort of naturalist care or work with them, and developing brochures and historical information, and again doing a curriculum for them where I got to interview elders down there about their food and about how they stayed healthy and what they enjoyed, and then transcribed all of that information into a curriculum for kids so that they would have this document to carry through the next few decades.
Any favorite dishes that you picked up? Some things that you learned how to cook that you would have never thought that you would have cooked?
Oh, good question. One of the dishes I really enjoyed eating, and I don't know if I'd know how to cook it right now. Well, there's a few of them, but one of them was fried fish head with eyes and all. It was delicious. And I don't eat fried food very well, but it was so good.
What are they frying it in?
Oh, I don't remember what she fried it in, but I believe it was an oil, not a Crisco, but an olive oil.
In Chinese medicine, fish head stew is what you used to do to supplement people's thyroids because of the thyroid gland. So, but you're actually, it sounds actually pretty, I don't know, I eat shrimp tails, so I guess, you know, fried fish head wouldn't be so bad.
It was really delicious.
Uh-huh. What kind of fish?
It was a salmon.
Salmon, fried salmon heads. And what else? Anything? Any other interesting dishes?
I learned how to make roe, and that was a really fun process, and I really enjoyed eating
like caviar.
Salty roe.
Yep. And any favorite herbs? You know, you were talking about learning a lot about what's available locally. So we've had Stella Lynn on the program before, and she's a fantastic herbalist, and she talks a lot about the things that grow wild around here. Are there any herbs or weeds that you're particularly partial to? I know that you once gave me a little jar of a calendula ointment that you made for me. So just curious if you've got a favorite.
Oh, it depends on the season for me and where I am. I really enjoy having a garden that has herbs in it. So certainly the dandelion and the calendula and even some of the culinary herbs of dill and such are fantastic, and they're fun to work with. I love to hike and just take little walks. So one of my favorite things to do in the spring is to go gather nettles up in the Lazy Mountain recreational area and use those for tea and such. I also really enjoy going up to the high country where arnica is, and so it's fun to go both harvest arnica and enjoy seeing it, but also then use it for bruises and strains and sprains and stuff.
Great. So what's your next step then? So after being in Seldovia, where did you go next?
I left Palmer to go down to naturopathic school down in Portland. So I spent the last 4 years studying naturopathic school at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine, or Natural Medicine.
So let's talk a little bit about, I know we wanted to get into what is naturopathic medicine. So you said you were going to talk about the six principles of naturopathic medicine and then maybe get into a little bit of the history of naturopathic medicine. And then we can, you know, talk about that in relation to allopathic medicine or functional medicine or some, or even holistic medicine, some of the other terms that people have thrown around. So specifically, we want to get into what is naturopathic medicine as you practice it.
And it would be great to hear what went into the decision to move away from pre-med. So you, it seemed like maybe you were going towards allopathic care. What had you change directions and move into naturopathic medicine? And did it come out of that experience in the rural Alaska and being exposed to traditional holistic lifestyle?
You know, maybe I'll start there because I often leave pieces of the story of how I got to naturopathic medicine out because it seems like such a long story. But when I was 18, I had planned on leaving for Guatemala to travel for a year, and I got mono 3 days before I was supposed to leave. And I had never been to a naturopath before, but had heard of them having grown up in Portland, where the main national college is. And so I went to the college and saw a doctor there, and after seeing my family doctor, I was very encouraged about how I could actually have control and support over my health and get better from mono without just laying still, like my doctor had said. So I felt really excited by naturopathic medicine as a patient having mononucleosis as an 18-year-old. And I decided at that time I really wanted to be a naturopath. But it took me a long time to really accept that that's what I should do. So I came up here, and I loved being a naturalist, and I loved working in rural Alaska, and really loved nutrition and wanted to focus on nutrition. And through a series of many hours of conversation with doctors and dietitians and nutritionists and all sorts of different professionals, I decided I really just needed to become a naturopath because that would help me fulfill my goals of not only nutrition, but being able to help people sustain health and incorporate lots of different interests of mine, including botanical medicine. So that's a piece of my inspiration, was being 18 and being sick. And that's really common for lots of naturopaths, is they have personal stories that either of friends or family or themselves that lead them to finding this medicine and being empowered by it and then becoming a naturopath so that they can continue to help others.
Yeah, that's how we became acupuncturists, actually. The same kind of story, is just we experience it as patients and experience a pretty powerful transformation, similar to what you're describing. And it opened up a door to health beyond just resolving symptoms, but a deeper state of vitality that incorporated how you're living and how you're expressing yourself beyond just that you're physically no longer in symptoms, but that all of you is alive and well and creative and moving forward in life. And anyway, that's hard to actually quantify.
I think the taking responsibility for your own health, yeah, and not feeling like a victim of whatever's happening. I mean, I often find when people come from Western allopathic medicine that there's this fixedness to a diagnosis, that they're somehow stuck with it. Like, oh, my doctor said I have this, you know. So they take the label and that's who they are, and they become that label, and they take that drug for the next 20 years just because the doctor said so. And I feel like naturopathic medicine, acupuncture, the approach is really sorting out individually what's going on with that person, and are there things that the person could do? You know, maybe it's not even taking an herb or some kind of a medicine. Maybe it's a lifestyle change, it's exercise, it's diet. But to get that, we actually have so much more control over our health, and you know, but we have to be willing to accept that responsibility
and
too.
And I think that's really all of it right there. It's just that is actually, you know, taking responsibility. And I think Western medicine more and more is actually starting to really see this and move in this direction too.
Absolutely. And I think the idea of having choice and cracking open that idea that It is not the relationship between doctor and patient is really not hierarchical, and instead it's developing a system of support and as a naturopathic doctor really helping figure out which avenue that person is able to find health. And not treating disease as the main focus, but actually, palliating or helping them through pain or whatever's happening at that point for them, but really cracking open the cause and figuring out how to help them overcome and become healthy through that.
And we always say that when a person comes in with a particular symptom, the symptom did not walk in on its own.
Yeah.
It's attached to a very complicated human being. So if you're not treating the whole person, that you're not really – so you can maybe put a Band-Aid over something and make a symptom go away. But there's lots of other things that can – things change that people didn't even expect could change if you're treating the whole person. Things that they didn't even know that needed to change will change. And I've said this before, but my big joke about holistic care is that people come in for knee pain and they end up getting married. So they had one thing going on, but they also had a fear of commitment that they didn't even realize. And that it's a joke, but it's really true. Is that the thing that the person comes in with, we would refer to it as the ticket in the door. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that's been bothering them so much, and they haven't figured out how to deal with that. So that's what brings them in. But you have so much more to offer than just focusing on that one narrow symptom.
Yeah, we talk a lot about really helping inspire and motivate a patient to continue working on their health beyond that particular item that they came in for. So if it's an acute or a cold or a broken bone or something, helping inspire them past that moment. Or if it's a chronic disease that they're walking in with and seeing you for several months, that they won't just stop when they feel a little bit better, but they'll actually continue, because health is a lifetime destiny, and helping build vitality and help them understand through teaching how to maintain their health is important as well.
And nobody thinks that they have to change their oil once and they're done.
Yeah, and there's something about the state of health that when you are really feeling great, there's almost an impulse to reach towards that which is actually higher and beyond. And so there's something creative that comes out of a state of vitality. So you're not just trying to get by anymore. It's like, wow, what else is possible? What else can I do? And so that's where it gets really exciting, mm-hmm. working with patients. And then the thing is that we don't want to settle for too little. And it's pretty much how the healthcare system, I think, has been set up, just that the bar has been set kind of low. So if the symptom is gone and blood tests look good, things okay, you're in a good state of health. That does not necessarily equate to somebody coming to life very fully and fully alive setting the stage for a long-term health either necessarily.
It's like getting married just to not get divorced.
Well,
what's the point?
All too often people come in and once they don't have, say, a stomach ache anymore, they realize, oh my gosh, I thought that was normal.
Yeah.
I've had that for 25 years. I had no idea I could live without that stomach ache or without that particular pain or something that they've overcome. And so there's so much to work on. And I think by making sure that it's not a fear-based experience, that it's actually coming to the doctors is not about disease. It's really about continuing to feel better and having a coach of sorts to help you know how to get there.
Great. So let's talk about the six principles.
We'll start with I just wanted to talk very basically about naturopathic medicine. It seeks to help a given individual by giving support to find wellness, and doing this by cleansing or with drainage or removal of the accumulated toxins or waste, by restoring the functions of the organs of elimination. So I'm sure you're very familiar with those elimination, that elimination through the gastrointestinal tract, through the kidneys, through the liver, through the skin. And so a lot of our healing modalities or tools have to do with helping clear out the toxins accumulated either exogenously by the outside world or endogenously by those systems not functioning correctly or us not being able to eliminate just the products of metabolism.
And well, I'd love to talk a little bit more about that topic because a lot of people say the word, oh, toxins. We hear that a lot, you know, and also needing to cleanse. And there's, you know, 50 million different versions.
There's no shortage of products and companies that are willing to assist anybody who wants to have a cleanse.
And we've seen products that are like, we call it the kitchen sink. I mean, there's 90 different herbs in there, you know, and like a third of them are Chinese, a third of them are Ayurvedic, and a third of them are Western, and there's some even medicine. I mean, it's this incredible combination. So like, where do you stand on that whole
continuum
from, and because I see people who literally are always doing some kind of cleanse and purge. I see people who just like they live for the next colonic. And then, you know, but they're not actually doing anything to get their body help. They just do that and they think, okay, now I've cleared that out and now I can go back to eating my, you know, drinking my Coca-Cola and eating brownies.
And with that, you know, why are we so toxic? And what is it that's going wrong that the natural cleansing mechanisms of the body aren't sufficient or aren't properly operating?
It sounds like we should have a series
of
conversations about this because these are huge topics too. What I was about to talk about a little bit is sort of foundationally in naturopathic medicine is helping the body eliminate that waste. And the waste really is just accumulated metabolic waste, ideally. I think more and more we do have those exogenous or outside of our body waste products that we do need to help people eliminate. But there's lots of different ways individuals can do elimination. And really the daily upkeep of making sure that all of those organs of elimination are functioning properly is probably the best thing that you can do, rather than binge cleanses and such like that. But those come in, those have a place as well, and it's really individual to individual as to when they should do that and how they should do that. And I personally think the simpler the better, but it's really an individual question.
So in general, though, when you're saying toxins from a naturopathic standpoint, it's more like stuff that sort of gums up the works. Like things are just not moving like they're supposed to be. So it's like products of metabolism that haven't been transformed enough for the body to get rid of. Is that fair
sure?
To say?
Even if we just talk about elimination in the liver and the liver breaks down toxins, and so it might get backed up a little bit in one of the phases. It has two phases of elimination, so it may do phase one really well, but not do phase two very well because of an enzyme deficiency or maybe there's just too much product or not enough product to kind of simplify it a little bit. Very commonly, elimination in the gastrointestinal tract is really slow for people. And any time that someone only has a bowel movement every day or every 2 days or so, their elimination is deficient. They need to have a bowel movement every single day in order to make sure that those toxins that our body's getting rid of in the bowels are gone and not being reabsorbed. So just simple things like that. And there are really simple daily tasks that we can do to help our elimination, like drinking plenty of water, drinking half our body weight in ounces, and making sure we get outside and do movement and some kind of activity, and really deep, good breathing techniques. Having 100 breaths a day, ideally, if possible, at least 10.
You mean conscious breaths you slow down
conscious
and you
breaths.
Notice that you're breathing.
Yeah, where you're, one way that people do it is to take a count of four breath and hold it, and then a count of four out. And so in doing that, you are absolutely getting oxygen and getting rid of carbon monoxide, but you're also massaging the organs and moving the diaphragms that we have throughout our torso. So there's a lot of ways that breath is important in helping with that elimination on a daily basis, and not to talk about stress and all of the other sort of mental emotional pieces that breath really plays a part in. That's really important as well. And stress is a toxin of sorts in the sense that it shifts enzymes and it shifts the way that we deal with our body and with elimination and with helping our body really function optimally. So breath helps with that as well.
Great. So we got through principle one. Five more to go.
Kind of. Actually, we didn't even
start. We didn't even get there.
Okay. We've talked around some of the principles already, but basically those six principles are the healing power of nature to identify and treat the cause. First, do no harm. Doctor is teacher. Treat the whole person. And prevention. And I wanted to just go into a few of those a little bit. Doctor's teacher, I think, is one of the ones that resonates with me a lot, because I think as naturopaths, and really in any, that's for any medical professional of any sort, being a teacher is one of the most foundational pieces of being a doctor, that you really help that person understand what's happening for them and how they have control and empower them to help themselves and to know that they have choices and that, again, that those choices are really on them to make and to continue on their path towards health. It's not a dead end at all. So we work a lot as naturopaths in helping people understand what's happening and how to help themselves. So that's a big one. First, do no harm is, I think, best described. There's basically not harming patients. So using methods and medicinal substances that minimize the risk of harmful effects and apply the least possible force or intervention necessary to diagnose illness and restore health. Whenever possible, the suppression of symptoms is avoided, as suppression generally interferes with the healing process. And basically, we respect and work with the vis medicatrix naturae in diagnosis, treatment, and counseling, for it is self-healing process that's not respected. If it's not respected, the patient may be harmed. So we really understand, and this is coming from hundreds of years of medicine, sort of historically understanding that the person has a vital force that can heal itself, and that if we can nudge that vital force in that person to understand that where to go, then it will take off and heal itself, that we're really just nudging and we're not actually healing.
You brought up a couple of things in what you said. One was about using the least invasive method for diagnosis. And I think that's really interesting, because in our culture, in Western medicine, there's so many diagnostic tools and there's so many tests that you can run. And I've actually seen people, we've seen people in our practice who literally have post-traumatic stress disorder from their experience in the hospital of being over-tested, of being poked and prodded and being scanned. And there's reasons
for that too, sure. In their own system.
And absolutely. And it just seems like we had a teacher in acupuncture school who was a neurologist in Russia, and at the time she was in Russia, there were none of these diagnostic tools, so she learned to pinpoint the location of a tumor to within a centimeter in the brain with like 25 different exercises. Didn't have to use an MRI machine.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me that where is that line between seriously invasive tests, or are there ways to pinpoint what's going on by doing less?
So on that note, we're going to take a brief break. You're listening to The Bridge to Everywhere in an interview with Dr. Megan Dance, naturopathic doctor at Soaring Crane Health Center. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Radio Free Palmer, KVRF 89.5 on your FM dial. If you'd like to get involved with community radio, contact us at radiofreepalmer.org. This is your chance to invent community radio in Sutton, Chickaloon, Butte, Palmer, and the surrounding areas.
Hello, this is Lee Hendrickson, president of Radio Free Palmer. I want to remind you that it's time to file for your PFD. And if you file online, you have the option to donate via Pick, Click, and Give to Radio Free Palmer. I would like to invite you to make a gift to your community radio station. Just search for us by name, Radio Free Palmer, or under the city, Palmer. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Bridge to Everywhere. This is Samantha Berg, and I'm here in the studio with Kevin Middleton and Dr. Megan Danz, and we are talking about naturopathic medicine. Megan is a naturopathic physician at Soaring Crane right in downtown Palmer. So we were talking a little about the principles of naturopathic medicine. Was there more that you had to say on that, or did you want to go a little bit into the history of naturopathic medicine?
You know, when we left off, Kevin was mentioning just the sort of complication with lots of different diagnostic methods, and Sam, you were talking about people having sort of a PTSD experience where they felt like they had been poked and prodded a lot. And I just wanted to back up for a moment and talk about naturopathic medicine in our education. Absolutely, we are educated to be primary care doctors. We understand disease, the pathology of disease, the physiology of disease, and the approach to both diagnosing and managing disease and symptoms and such. What we are talking about with the philosophy of naturopathic medicine and the approach is that although we have this education and understand lab diagnostics and everything, we have to step back from that once we understand what's happening for somebody and apply this different approach to health. And certainly when somebody comes into the office, we're very much interested in all of those numbers and everything that brings them in their history and working with other specialists around the state and in helping their health. But essentially, our philosophy then guides us to how we're going to approach their health and as an individual.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's a lot of there's a personal relationship centered dimension to this medicine, it sounds like. And is there time, like in a typical office visit, where there's really this kind of time to spend with patients for you?
Absolutely. And we have a really extensive intake that we ask patients to fill out before they come as a new patient to see us, that just gives us an outline of their history, what brings them in, and then what kind of guides them in life. What are their sort of health beliefs, and how invested are they in getting better, and when do they know they'll get better or they'll be better and such. And then we sit down for an hour and a half, and that's just the initial visit, and hearing the history and understanding a little bit more of the layers of what brings them in. But we really think of it as, ideally being a lifetime relationship. And in such, the idea of getting all the information all at once is really impossible. So just like peeling an onion or anything, we really get to know people over time and try to help them in the different stages of their life as we continue to know each other. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about First Do No Harm, though, just because I think it's a really interesting idea to talk about the philosophy of naturopathic medicine. We think about a pyramid where the bottom of the pyramid is that do no harm. When we first approach a treatment with somebody, we're really thinking about lifestyle, nutrition, some of the real basic ways that people can take on their health and shift. And often that makes incredible change. It doesn't take a medication of some sort to make that shift. And then as you go up the pyramid, you get into doing homeopathy or different energetic methods or physical medicine, up to supplements and different. And then at the top is surgery and pharmaceuticals and other ones that are potentially a little bit more harmful and absolutely have a place in medicine, but you want to try these others first so that you make sure that when you're choosing those, you're choosing them really wisely. So I think that is one of our guiding principles, or piece of our guiding principle in that way.
And would patients be able to have you communicate with their physician? Is there that kind of cross-referring or good communication?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We expect that. If somebody comes in who has a different, another primary care doctor or is seeing other specialists, or if we have decided that they need to see other specialists, absolutely we would have conversations, work together with other physicians to make sure that we're a team. Great. In working on that health. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Did you want to move into the history of naturopathic medicine? Or do you think we want to cover a little bit more on the principles?
I just had one other concept I wanted to put out, and then we can move on to the history for a moment. I wanted to just put this kind of analogy out of health and disease. And so if you kind of, the concept of sitting in a room with the door closed that has one window and pulling the shade on that window so that the room is completely dark. And once you've done that, asking, how do you make the room light? And so it could be light by opening the door or opening the window or opening the shade or taking the roof off, or some people say putting their iPhone on, or a number of different things, and all of those are true. But the concept being, well, light is health. So you pull light into the room. You let light into the room, but you can't, and darkness is disease. You can't actually get darkness out of the room. So when somebody comes to us, helping them understand that if you add light to the room, if you add health, then you crowd out darkness, you crowd out disease. And I just like that idea of letting more light in, you know, of letting more health in, so that disease isn't such a prominent aspect of somebody's life.
So you don't make the disease go away, you just turn up the light brighter.
Yeah, that disease will eventually go
right,
away.
But you're not forcing it. You're not like approaching it from, you're not looking at like, well, how do we make this dark go away? You're just turning on the light of health. And then eventually, as the body gets healthier, that disease process hopefully gets resolved.
Well, we can't cut it out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or you can, but it doesn't really necessarily go away.
But that there's a process that generated that disease. So if you cut out the end product, you still have the process that created that product.
So a classic example of that is warts. So you burn off or you cut off warts. Well, they were there for a reason. So different people have different ways of expressing some sort of imbalance in their body. And warts may not be the worst way to express that imbalance. And so when you cut them off, where does that imbalance go? And we see that in different ways for people. And it's not that there's always, I mean, that's what we talk about when we talk about suppression. We don't want to suppress disease. We want to let more light in to help the health and help the vitality and help that person become healthy in a way that really finds balance.
I really like this analogy. It's there are two different substances, you could say, that the principles of illness and the principles of healing, and they're two railroad tracks that never intersect. Really, they're two different impulses, the life impulse and the death impulse, really, ultimately. And when you're talking about an entirely different reality, which is the health reality, which is to bring light into a picture, the forces of vitality, the support for the metabolism, the very structure of the body, the intelligence of the body to express itself. And that's just a completely different direction, and energetic, I guess you could say, than the process of pathology. And I love that, you know, you're sort of emphasizing that.
And I also think in terms of the way we think about it when we're doing an intake with somebody is that we're looking for, we know what a healthy organ function looks like. We know what each one of the organ systems are supposed to be doing in health. And it's sort of in the process of looking for that healthy function, you kind of bump into the places where things aren't working, but you're not really looking, oh, let's just look for what's wrong. You're looking for, okay, is that working the way it's supposed to? Is that working the way it's supposed to? Is that, oh, look at that. Something in the ecology, you know, somebody's giving too much, somebody's not giving enough, you know, somebody's overworking because somebody's not, you know, pulling their weight in the system. So we look at it as like an ecology, and how do you get that ecology functioning really well? And then that's generates health.
And you know, the other that does bring us to the aspect of choice, doesn't it? Because really, here we are standing between choices that lead to health and choices that maybe diminish health or actually support pathology. So how do you help people see that and help them make this decision? So to get excited about the possibility of change. Because it's scary, you know, it's actually the unknown. Sometimes what's known, even though it may be pathology, it's known, it's comfortable, it's familiar, and
it's a mess, but it's my mess, and I know it.
And I think that, you know, on some level, you know, most people can relate to that, a place that they don't want to change, though they should. How do you do that? How do you walk people through that transition?
You know, again, and I hate to be obtuse, but it's so individualized. Some people are ready to jump in and move, and others are coming with their feet and their hands out, and they are sure that they're going to have to change everything and that it would be a disaster to ask them to change a thing. So in some ways, we have to be firm because as a doctor, as their doctor, they're asking me to help them, and so I expect certain changes from them, but it really can go slow. It is their choice as far as how we move and where we move, as long as they're not being harmed. And so I think there's lots of different ways to motivate and inspire and also to help kind of move the current in them of shift and change. And there's certainly different medicine that, you know, botanicals and homeopathics and flower essences that I like to use to make that shift. But again, it's really how to inspire. And Kevin, you told me a story years ago about inspiring a patient to make a change by you learning the guitar so that they would quit smoking. And I have always thought of that because I think it was such a sweet story of a doctor or a practitioner taking on that and becoming human with the patient. And, I mean, we're always human, but I think that there's that misconception that sometimes that we're not, there must be misconception that I always eat a perfect diet and that I'm always drinking as much water as I should and I'm doing castor oil packs every single night. And it's just, we're human, just like anybody else. And I have aspirations, too, and to make changes and shift. And health is not something that we acquire and keep. It is something we have to maintain all the time and that we have to be just as flexible as we grow and shift and our lives change it, to shift that health, too. So there's so many different ways to do it, and I think that's the art of being in medicine, is really meeting that person where they are and growing from there.
And some people are going to move like glaciers and some people are going to move like hummingbirds. And so just because my expectation, you know, if I'm hummingbird type, if I run up against somebody who's more like a glacier, I'm going to have to meet them there or we're not going to really get anywhere. I'm not going to be the practitioner for them. You know,
exactly.
Or I'm just going to have to, okay, this is a glaciation process. It's going to take a few years, or okay, this is going to be done in, you know, a couple of months. Right.
Exactly. And I want to point what you're saying out too, that not, I don't expect that every person that comes to me is going to be fit for me, or, and I don't mean that, I just mean that I may not be the right doctor for them. I may not resonate for them the way that another naturopath would. So I would really encourage people to keep trying if they haven't had the kind of experience they would like, because I think we all have unique abilities and tools. And naturopathic medicine is, just really briefly, historically, when it came to the United States and was formed by Benedict Lust, Dr. Benedict Lust in the United States, it really was a conference, a merging of physical medicine and manipulation and dietetics and eclectic medicine with botanicals and homeopathy, and all sorts of different tools were put together, and we learn all those tools, but we're not all focused on them in what we do every day, because we're much better if we have a depth of knowledge about some of them and then refer out for others.
Yeah, there's so many different tools that you can use. I mean, the thing that drives me nuts the most is when somebody said, oh, yeah, I tried acupuncture once. It didn't work. I mean, there's all the different tools, there's different ways of practicing it. And then there's just, like you said, the rapport between the person and the practitioner. Mm-hmm. There has to be a partnership. There has to be a rapport or you're not going anywhere. You know, there can be, something can happen for sure. I mean, you know, obviously you can treat animals who, you know, you don't necessarily have a conversational rapport, but there does have to be some connection there where you feel like this is somebody I can work with, because it is, as you said, going to be a long-term relationship. So you want to feel like this is someplace where I can settle in and I've got somebody who's got my back and who's going to point me in the right direction, and I feel like this is going to work for me and it's not constantly butting heads, so that there is a little bit of that, even in a good relationship. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a trust, you know, is a foundational piece of this, and setting up maybe the terms of the relationship, of what really are our expectations that are realistically attainable, and what a provider offers and what the patient is looking for. Mm-hmm. And if that can be very clear in the front end and there's real trust, it seems like that's a pretty strong ground for partnership.
Mm-hmm. So we've got about 15 minutes left, and there's a couple of things I want to cover, so I'll let you decide which way you want to go. First, I wanted just to talk about the low-energy neurofeedback system that you do, because does anybody else in the state do that, or are you the only person doing that?
Dr. Adam Grove does a traditional neurofeedback system, and as part of his treatment, he does use the lens, the low-energy neurofeedback system, but not specific the way I do. I do not do any traditional neurofeedback. I only focus on doing this lens-style neurofeedback, okay. And I'm the only one I know of.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about that, and I also want to talk about the upcoming legislation that things may potentially be changing on how naturopaths can deliver medicine. So just wanted to let everybody know what's going on so people can voice their concern. There's a website that you wanted to give. So maybe we can start there just so we get that information out and then go back to the lens information. Yeah.
That's fine. Okay. You know, I can actually explain the lens quickly,
great,
and then
perfect.
We'll move on and we can finish with the naturopathic changes. The lens is low-energy neurofeedback system. It is a style of neurofeedback that is different than traditional neurofeedback. Traditional neurofeedback is a way of training the brain to subconsciously make changes. This particular type of neurofeedback actually does not do any training. There's no, if anyone in the audience has any experience with traditional neurofeedback, you look at a screen and you can control how long that screen is on or how long the music plays with your brain, and you kind of train it over time to do it longer or differently. This particular neurofeedback actually just communicates with the brain in a low-energy way and helps make it more functional and optimizes its communication. So one of the more dramatic examples is working with somebody with post-traumatic stress syndrome, say from a vet, or who has, you know, severe anxiety and some depression and maybe some physical shifts that have happened for them, or somebody with a traumatic brain injury from an accident of some sort. Those are really dramatic, symptom-based patients that I work with this lens system, and helping them basically identify what parts of their brain are optimally functioning and what parts are not. And by understanding that, then we communicate with the ones that are optimally functioning, and then those actually help the ones that are low and high as far as brain waves. And it helps the brain understand how to move about. And it's a very effective, incredible treatment. Akin to homeopathy in the way that it works as far as sort of a domino effect, where some people say homeopathy is sort of like dominoes, where you just push the first one and the body knows what to do with the rest. And the same is true for this lens with the brain, that once you start communicating with the brain, it is a domino effect of communication. The brain thinks, oh my gosh, there are so many possibilities of how to make myself work better, and it's really good symptom-wise for anxiety and depression and migraines and just generally for headaches, as long as there aren't other bigger issues.
Does it require multiple treatments to hold?
Typically, yes. Yeah. I ask people to commit to 6 weeks of coming once a week. And that point, we'll know if the lens is going to work for them or not. And that's really just to get an understanding of, I mean, basically what we do initially is do a mapping. And sometimes it can take that 6 weeks to do a mapping. Sometimes it just takes one or two sessions, depending on the person and how they how sensitive they are. Once we have their map, then we can start treatment. But the mapping process itself is actually does make shifts for people, and we have patients that within the first session are sleeping better or have a reduction of their migraine. Or
is there anything that the patients need to be doing accompanying the treatment to help facilitate that communication in the brain? Are there exercises that they do? I'm thinking like EMDR, like the rapid eye movement therapy. Is there something like that that you do in addition to it?
There's all sorts of different work that we can do alongside. And again, it's meeting the patient where they are. After each treatment, or even during the mapping time, I offer cranial sacral or shiatsu massage because I see that the physical work with the body does help the brain integrate. It really, some of those basic treatments of rest and water and doing, you know, processes of elimination being perfect are some of the real most important. There's handouts about food and taking care of the brain, and it really just depends on where the person's at, because if they've just had a stroke or a traumatic brain injury, we really have to work with some very, very simple things first in helping them get back up to function.
And how long does the procedure take, and does it hurt at all?
The mapping process takes about 2 minutes, or I'm sorry, 2 seconds, and so each there are 21 sites on the brain and on the head, basically. It does not hurt at all. Often people are surprised how quick it is. And that there's a lot of anticipation for it for the first session, and then it's nothing like what they thought. But basically they sit in a chair. I attach an electrode to their head in one of those 21 sites, and then two electrodes to their ears as grounds. And then I work through a sequence on the computer of mapping. And those, typically that mapping is 2 seconds per site.
And is there any effect in degenerative conditions like Alzheimer's or dementia?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Well, we just have a few minutes, so let's go into the legislation and let people know where they can go to comment about it.
Great.
So you can tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Okay. So the Alaska Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing have proposed changes to the naturopathic scope of practice that will severely limit your access to safe and effective naturopathic medicine. Since 1986, naturopaths have provided quality health care to all Alaskans under the current regulations. So these are regulations that are really going to shift our scope of practice, which is already reduced from many other states around the country.
And just for an example, we were talking before the show, other naturopaths, like in Oregon, for instance, you can prescribe, antibiotics, or you can injectables. There, you can prescribe what's considered Western medicine.
Absolutely. Right? I mean, yeah. I have hours and hours of education on pharmaceuticals, which is really helpful for working with patients who are on those pharmaceuticals and in discussing them with other doctors. But I do would have prescriptive rights in Oregon and Washington, mm-hmm. and many other states around.
But
the
in
country.
Alaska, that's just what it's not given a right that naturopaths have.
And exactly. What's driving that proposed change?
I'm a little unclear about that, so I'm not sure if I can answer that specifically. But there is a call to help settle our scope of practice here in Alaska and to make sure that it is in line with the regulations that are out there. So that's an important piece that needs to happen. But at this point, the proposed regulations are going to shift our scope so much that it would be binding in ways that don't make sense at all. In fact, you know, foundationally, homeopathics and botanical medicine and nutrition and lifestyle counseling and hydrotherapy are really important for what we do and how we make change for somebody. So just as an example, so the proposes adopting regulation changes to Title 12, Chapter 42 of the Alaska Administrative Code. And these changes, by changing the definition of dietetics and herbal medicine, naturopathic doctors will be prohibited from providing vitamin injections or nutritional IVs. Under the proposed regulation changes, we will not be able to order sterile water or saline from a pharmacy. Homeopathic medicines and certain herbal medicines and tinctures that fall under the prescriptive definition will be denied to all naturopathic doctors and ultimately to you in the state of Alaska. So as an example, ginger comes under that regulation. So I think that there's a misunderstanding, the people who are writing these regulations, as far as how what this really means for us. But we need your help as listeners and people who support naturopathic medicine to make sure that your voice is heard throughout the state before January 24th. There's a really short timeline to get your thoughts out there. And the Alaska ANP, the Alaska Association of Naturopathic Physicians, has a website that they've put together. And I really encourage you to go to this website to put your comments on. And we actually have little boxes you can just fill out. It's a really easy process, and we'd really appreciate all the support we can get.
And the website's what?
The website we can post on if we want.
Put it on the Facebook page, yep.
It's also www.aknaturopathic.com. So that's aknaturopathic.com.
Great.
Great. We have treated so many hundreds of people over the years who have been in the care of naturopath Dr. Amy Chadwick or Dr. Joni Kirk.
Or Dr. Ellenberg.
Or Dr. Ellenberg and Dr. Adam Grove
and
Anchorage.
And, yep, and Dr. Wings.
Yeah, and just absolutely life-changing medicine. I mean, the stories are just amazing, the kind of care that that we've all been had access to here in the state of Alaska. So I hope listeners will do that. aknaturopathic.com, is that right?
Yes,
and we'll put that up on the Bridge to Everywhere Facebook page as well, so people can see that, and it'll go out in our newsletter too.
Great, thank you.
So yeah, and just to maybe recap a little bit, so the kind of conditions that folks might come to you for, the kinds of things that that you frequently treat and you actually really thrive and enjoy treating, what would be some of those things?
Oh, we are trained to really treat treat anybody that walks in the door. So that's a hard question to answer because we truly can. I love working with pediatrics and family medicine, and I have a lot of, I did a lot of work with pediatrics and women's health and then brain injury. And so at this point, I guess that's my answer, but I honestly love working with anybody that walks
Great.
In the door. It's,
okay. Can you tell us how people would get in touch with you if they want to make an appointment?
Absolutely. 745-3999 is the Soaring Crane number, or Soaring Crane. I believe it's soaringcrane.com. Might be soaringcrane.net,
I think. Yep. we'll just make sure we get that correct on the website.
We're also on 209 West Cedar Avenue. So
right across from the post office in Palmer.
Yep, we're between Great. The post office and Country Cuts. That's an easy way to find us.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Megan Dance from Naturopathic Center, Soaring Crane Natural Health Center in downtown Palmer. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks for joining us. Have a great night. Great
Thank
to have you.
You
here.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Like us on Facebook at Bridge to Everywhere to access more information, links and resources from our guests and show topics.